Okay. Are we ready? Excellent. Okay, before we begin then, let us all take a moment to pay homage to the most magnificent one, the fully awakened one, the unvanquished one. He is our teacher, our master, our guide. He who proclaimed the truths that is true for all of us. The truth that transcends any differences that we perceive in and amongst ourselves. This is the noble truth that is true for all sentient beings. So we are here to absorb that, to understand that, and to free ourselves from all suffering. And as we do so, let us also remind ourselves that we are here with purpose. So this is not a mere veneration or a mark of reverence. This is also a pledge that we take upon ourselves to free ourselves from suffering. And so, let us all begin with that. Let us bring our palms together to chant the Namaskara and then observe the precepts before we begin.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
It's about time you begin to understand how meritorious you must be. It is your merit that has brought you here, and it is your merit that has kept you coming here. How many weeks or how many Sundays have you sacrificed by now? Almost 7, 8? 7 or 8? Yes? Oh, you've got a clock now as well. 4 times. In total? 7? 7 or 8 sermons, yes. This is not a miracle. You know, a man comes the first day, he wants to know what it's going to be like. Right? Because his friends ask him to come along. On the first day, you can understand that. Second day, he remembers that at the end of the first talk, there was a free lunch. So he comes for that. Right? But then you can't tell me that on the 7th, on the 8th day, you've been coming for that sandwich you get at the end of the talk, surely? Or that milk packet you get at the end of the talk? You can't tell me you're coming here for that, surely? You're not coming here for that. Oh, and on the note of sandwiches, I think it's official. It's official. I have witnessed, and I think we can take this to the Guinness World Records. I have officially witnessed the tiniest sandwich known to man. It was offered in Rajagiri. In this place. The effort that you put in. I can just imagine, I was talking with the Swami Nahanse on the way back last week, and Anagarika Mahathas, who drive us back to the monastery, I was talking to them. We were discussing, you know, the effort that you must put in to wake up early on a Sunday morning and then to prepare those, whatever you have to offer. And then, you know, you must be putting it on the surgical table with surgical knives, you know, cutting them so that they're perfect squares. And I think any smaller and you'd have to offer them with forceps. But, you know, it's not that that's all you have. You have that and much more. But I know where you have made them as small as you possibly can. We talked about this, didn't we? Because you are now giving the gift of giving. Giving is a simple thing to do. I mean, it's not simple, but I think people generally give. But to give the gift of giving, it takes greatness. You know, usually, just think about when people do an almsgiving. Typically, people want to give it and make a scene out of it. Typically. I don't mean everyone, but you know, you see that quite a bit these days. They want to make a scene out of it. They want to make it the biggest almsgiving. It doesn't matter whether the Swaminarayana can eat all of it or not. Sometimes they are force-fed. Like the geese in France, they're force-fed. There's a practice of force-feeding birds so that you can get their livers as it's a delicacy. Foie gras is the cuisine or the item of food. So geese are force-fed. So it has come to a point where sometimes when you go to a temple, you have to, you know, you want to make a show out of it. People want to make a show out of it. It's a, they may want to make a scene out of it, and they want to set, they use it to set a status. I, you know, it's like a wedding. You know, when you have a wedding, you want it to be the grandest wedding. So it has to be the grandest wedding so that everyone knows about it. And people use it. You know, this is how ego works. Right? Anything and everything that helps to boost the ego, people use it. When people feel small, they make use of opportunities like this to help them feel, help themselves feel big. That's usually how it works. As we begin to understand how the mind works, you will also understand why you observe some of these things out there, why people do some of these things. So, for someone to come to terms with the fact that I can only offer something so small, you know, something so small to the Swaminarayana and not be embarrassed about it, I think that speaks volumes. To not be embarrassed about it. Sometimes I've seen some of you, when you offer, maybe you'll bring a biscuit and then you'll break it in half. And you'll put one half into the first Swaminarayana's arms bowl and the second half into the second Swaminarayana's arms bowl. No, in that moment I don't think how stingy you are. I think how great you are. Because you are beginning to understand that the merit is not in the size of what you offer. It's not in the quantity. Merit is in your intention. Just think about the intention that you have in that moment. You're trying not to fill the Swaminarayana's arms bowl up by the time he leaves the school so that he can go on an arms round and be of service to those who are more needy. Be of service to those who have given little and therefore they have little. See, you are giving little so that those who have little can give lots. Incredible. Well done, all of you. I honestly can't congratulate you enough. You know, it is a moment of delight for me when I step out there and we both come on arms. Right? The graciousness with which you offer it, however small that is, sometimes it's just a spoonful of rice. I know, I see some of you, you know, you bring like large portions, but you take your tiny little spoon out. Sometimes it's just a teaspoon, right? And with that you offer it into the arms bowl. And I sometimes wait, you know, thinking, you know, poor lady, she probably wants to offer maybe half of it. But no. You're not bothered by that. You wait until the Swaminarayana passes. You know, that gives me a sigh of relief because I know I haven't offended you. Going on an arms round is no easy task. Believe you me. Try it one day. Hint, hint. Before you can go on an arms round, there are some pre-qualifications you must fulfill. Right? So, that's an invitation for someday, one day, maybe, somehow. But, it fills my heart with joy just to see the humbleness, the humility with which you can make such a small offering. Because it is not the size of the offering that I'm interested in. If I can go from door to door to as many homes as I possibly can after I've left the college, the school, these premises, I have you to be grateful for. They have you to be grateful for. It really shows the magnitude of your compassion. Hats off to you, ladies and gentlemen. Well done. It has honestly made me proud of all of you. And last week I went and told Guru Hamro, my teacher as well, how our regulars at Rajagiri, how they have come to now pick up the virtue of the gift of giving. And he wanted to pass his compliments to all of you. So there you are. Well done. And as you know, make it an opportunity for as many of you to make an offering. On some occasions I see there'll be some who will be stood and you know they will have their palms together doing a sadhukar, and that's all great. But if you have maybe one biscuit, break it in half, give it to the person next to you if he has nothing to offer, or if she has nothing to offer. That is why on some occasion when you drop something into the alms bowl and I know that you have nothing else left to give to the monk behind me, I'll sometimes take it out and break it in half and give you one half and to offer it to the Swami Nasi behind me. Because now you've done two meritorious deeds. It's not the food that I want. It's you I want. It's you making use of this opportunity to engage in as many merits as you possibly can. Because, you know, let's be honest, back in those days, you know, Swami Nuhansi's going on Pindapada was quite a common occurrence. It was to be seen. But nowadays, you know, it's a rarity, isn't it? Almost every home I go to, people, you know, they are not used to this. That's why most people bring out money. Sometimes they say, Swami Nuhansi, give me a few moments, and then they'll go rummaging and trying to find whatever, you know, the 50 rupees, the 10 rupees, or the 20 rupees that they can cobble up, because that's all they have to give. So somehow they'll find it, maybe under the pillow, maybe under the bed mattress, sometimes maybe in a jar somewhere kept for safekeeping, right? In case of emergencies, they'll somehow find that 20 rupees, and then they'll, you know, an old Achi Amma, she'll bring that and say, Swami Nuhansi, this is all I have, I'm so sorry, I didn't know you were coming. 10 minutes, we've been waiting outside in the sun. And then I'll say, no Amma, it's not the money I want. If you have something you can offer for alms, then you may do so. And they say, oh, these Swami Nuhansi, they don't take money. Now she becomes a town crier. It's incredible. It's such a fantastic experience. As I said, you know, we go there to take them on a journey, on an adventure. So now you know what she does. Now she will go with us, telling people, no, they don't take money, they don't take money. These Swami Nuhansi, they don't take money. If you have anything to eat, just come and offer it. You know, these Swami Nuhansi, they don't take money. I'm not here to say whether taking money is right or wrong. That is not my place. Because, you know, there might be a Swami Nuhansi out there who needs a card of paracetamol. Maybe he's got a backache, maybe he needs some medication, maybe he needs some treatment. Perhaps, you know, the pudding that you offer or the rice you offer or the sandwich you offer is not going to do it for him, and he has no other way of sustaining himself. So he respites to Pindapatha. That's the only means from which he gets anything. So if you ask me, is that right or wrong? I don't think it's our place to make that judgment. You know, one thing I learned as I matured in the Dhamma is it's not my place to judge anybody. I used to think that I was the Supreme Court judge. I could judge everybody and everyone and anything and everything. I always had an opinion about everything. Ring a bell? But nowadays, not so. Today I'm able to accept everything equanimously. Today I'm able to, and I'm training myself to do it even more. You know, I'm training myself to see good and bad that exists in this world and be okay with that. I do what I can to help people become better, but there will always be the bad people, because it's not the bad people that is bad. I have learned to hate the sin but love the sinner. That is what we need to do. So we know that sin will always be there. In the world that we live in, ladies and gentlemen, you know, sin will always be there. Otherwise, what is the use for people like ourselves? What is the use of people like Jesus Christ? What is the use of people like the Buddha, like the Prophet Muhammad? What purpose do they serve if sin is not out there? So they come into this world to make a difference. You know, just think back about your past. None of us were as virtuous as we claim to be today. Let's be honest. We didn't all come into this world with a halo above our heads, did we? Every saint has a past, and every sinner, a future. In your past, you will have had a sinner. Today, you are that much more a saint because of the transformation that has happened behind you and within you. And we have our teachers, our elders, our parents, all of them to thank for that. I think you'll share with me in my opinion with that. About that, I'm highly opinionated that none of this was my making. Who you see here today is the transformation that many people who walked into my life, those who left the mark of kindness, compassion and goodness, as well as those who taught me lessons. Because what didn't break me made me stronger. In the face of adversity, I learned to apply the principles that I had learned about goodness and kindness and virtue. They gave me an opportunity to practice that and to live that. So I have everyone who walked into my life to thank for, to who I have become today. I think you can share with me in my opinion of that. So, that is the adventure we go on. The adventure to take others on an adventure. Even last week the same happened. We went and stood outside a very poor looking home. You know, it's almost it's a shack, really. You wouldn't call it a house. You certainly wouldn't call it a house. It's a shack. But it's home to two or three people, maybe more. If you looked at their clothing, you know, it's in tatters. I don't think they've ever received a New Year's gift. For Alutaurudu, I don't think they ever received a new item of clothing. Maybe not for the last 5 years. Sin, no? I say, yes, not now, back then. Perhaps on an occasion when they had the opportunity to make giving happen, perhaps they stopped it from happening. Perhaps back then, a while back, you know, many years ago, many eons ago, maybe many births ago, they had much, but they were stingy. They didn't give. So today, they suffer the consequences of that. Giving attracts receiving. That's the way it works. There's only one way to receive, and that is to give. This is why I am so grateful and I'm so glad and so pleased about the fact that you have enabled them to now engage in the practice of giving. Because if you fill this alms bowl up before I have left here, I'm afraid I can't carry on from there. Because there are rules of conduct about how much alms we can accept into an alms bowl. So if you fill it to the brim, then that's it. I can't go on after that. So, yet again I remind you, I want all of you to offer something. You can all engage in that. You know, from the little ones to the big ones, you can all engage in that. Now some of you I notice doing this, and I can't tell you how pleased I am as a member of the Mahasangha to see you engage in such tremendously joyful acts. Some of you will let others offer and all you will do is sit by the side and, you know, say a sadhukar. And I know you do it because you want, you don't want to feel Swami Maharaj's arms bowl up. Incredible. You know, that giving up is just, it's no easy giving up. Giving up the opportunity, giving up a chance on behalf of somebody else so that someone else can be happy. Someone else can engage in a deed and you can just rejoice in it. What greatness that is. Remarkable. Remarkable. This is what I am happy to have accomplished by coming here. It matters not, because I'm not going to give you a test at the end of these talks and ask you the answers to the questions of the Dhamma points that I have been sharing with you. You're not going to get a test on name the steps of Paticchasamuppada. You're not going to get that question. I'm not going to ask you that. It's not going to be one of my tests. I'm not going to ask you, give me a sermon on the Four Noble Truths, and if you get it wrong, you shall be kicked out. No. I'm not preparing you for Dharmacharya. No. I'm preparing you for Nibbana and failing that, for heaven. That is what we are here for. Heaven is where you can go if you fail Nibbana. But I don't want any of you to have your hopes on heaven. Because soon enough, you will realize that there is suffering everywhere. When even the gods come to the Buddha seeking his mercy, when even the great Brahmas come to the Buddha, come to the great elders Sariputta and Mahamoggallana for mercy, where do you seek solace in these 31 realms of existence? So we can settle for heaven if Nibbana doesn't work out for us. So don't keep your hopes on heaven. It's fine if that's where we end up, but that's not our destination. That is why it matters not to us who we give to. What matters to us is we give up. When you give to someone, you can go to heaven. When you give up, you go to Nibbana. That's the difference. And there's a fine distinction between the two things. We talk about some of these things on the Saturday sermons at the monastery. But fear not, we will discuss all of that here. Just let time take its course. But what I want you to recognize is how much merits you have been gaining, accruing, and accumulating by coming here, by bringing someone else here. You know, if you drive here, ladies and gentlemen, right, and there's three of you at home and there's a spare seat in the car, what could you do? There's a seed that I've just planted in your mind. Have a think about what you could do. Maybe ask your friend. Ask your best friend, hey, have you got a, this, can you spare a Sunday morning? What for? Free sandwiches. Yeah, I think I could do that. Right, but for that you have to sit and listen to a talk for about 1.5-2 hours. That's it. No commitment, that's it. You just have to sit there, listen to a talk, and if you don't like the talk, you can go for a walk. That's fine as well. There's plenty of room. Right? You can go for a walk, get some fresh air. This is not a punishment. How's that? And you get some free sandwiches at the end of that. Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, I'm for that. Right. How much should I pay for it? What's the price? What's the cost? Now, here's the deal. Some people will not come if you say it's free. That's the way the mind works. Because the mind needs to somehow find a way to value things. Right? That's, you know, today, in this day and age, you know, people don't appreciate mother's love. You know why? You know why? She doesn't charge you for it. If mother's love came with a price tag, people would save up for it. They would. Honestly, they would. But today, you know, there's no price for it. So therefore, it's priceless. And therefore, it is of little value, little significance. For most. Not for all, but for most. What is the price? What is the price for a father who sacrifices his entire life? From the moment his child is born, he gives up his friends, he gives up his hobbies, he gives up all his other interests. He gives up going to the club, he gives up going for a drink with his friends. He gives up cricket, he gives up golf, he gives up badminton, he gives up all that. Just so that he can be there for his child. What is the price of that? How much do you pay for that? If you had to put a price tag on that, what would you? But you know why people don't appreciate that? You know why people don't value that? Because they look for the price tag. Where is it? There's no price tag, so it must be free. If something's free, it's got to be useless. That's why it's free. See, we live in a world where for something to have value, it has to have a dollar sign in front of it. Shouldn't it? But how much is a father's love? All the blood, sweat and tears that he has shed, how much is that? You know what your father has done for you. You know who you are today, and that is because of your father. The ladies in the house, you know how much your father protected you and kept you safe. Do you remember when you wanted to go out? Go for tuition classes? How he would come and stand outside to collect you, giving a glance at every boy who walks past. Hey, you, I know what you're looking at. Walk away. You, why are you looking at my daughter? Walk away. He used to have a fine radar, didn't he? Always scanning for danger. Do you remember your father? And the great man he was? Oh, he still is. If he was, then in his loving memory, you know, let's be grateful to him. That's a life that was sacrificed for his children. And it mattered not how many of you were at home. Four of you and all four of you received the same love. Five of you, the same love. If he could, he would carry all five of you. One on his head, one on his back, two on his hands, and two on his shoulders. What's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, you were heavy. You were as heavy as a watermelon. But to him, he didn't show it. He didn't. All he wanted to show you was how much he loved you. Without a care in the world, as if he was there for you. Remember when you were crying and you felt like, you know, life was just completely going against you and you felt almost suicidal. When you felt like there was no one for you, no one there for you to share your problems. When, you know, when the unspeakable happened, perhaps, in some of your lives. When there were some things that happened that you couldn't share with anybody. You didn't know how to share it with your mother, how to share it with your father, but somehow you picked up the courage. You held her hand, you sat down with him, and you said, "Appachi, I have something to tell you. Please hold on to me. I need you to be strong for me right now, because I am very weak." And then you cried, and you cried, and you cried, and you cried. And he had to do all the questions. He asked you all the questions to somehow get it out of you. When he realized, right, the unspeakable had happened. When the whole, you know, the family's name had been tarnished. He still said, "Dua, it's fine. Let Tati worry about it. you just carry on with your work. And just watch out. Just be careful. You know, these things can happen. It's alright. I'm here for you. Remember? Do you remember what Amma did for you? I'm just talking about the mother in this birth. You know, the reason you're a human being today, ladies and gentlemen, is not because of your Amma from this birth. You were a human before you came into a mother's womb. You were a human Gandhab. Before you came into a mother's womb. And it was not your mother that made you a human being. It was your mother before, who taught you your values, who protected you, safeguarded you, who kept you safe, who punished you when you were up to no good. Perhaps she might have given you the odd slap. But remember, when Appachi, Amma, Tata, whoever, you know, they gave you the slap later in the evening, what did they come? What did they do? They came up to your bed, they sat down by your side, right, patted your head and said, Dua, Tati teka tarahan ene ene. Remember? Love. That's a real sacrifice. You know, these are the people who made us who we are today. I know what my mother and father did for me, and I'm sure you do what they did for you. So when we transfer merits at the end of these talks, you know, we always spare a moment for them. Our mothers and fathers, be they alive or having passed on to the next. May they all rejoice in these merits. May they watch you from wherever they are today. May they see you from wherever they are today and be happy and delighted about the fact that you are today making an effort to free yourself from suffering. Because you know what? That is all they wanted for you. You know why they taught you? You know why they fed you? You know why they looked after you and did everything in the book? This day and age, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we have motor vehicles that can take us from place to place. Right? But perhaps a few generations ago, when you were ill, when you were very poorly, when you were sick, when you had that terrible fever, do you remember how your father carried you in his arms and ran to the hospital? This might sound like fantasy in today's day and age because all you have to do is ring the doctor. But, you know, go back a few generations. If it were the case today that we didn't have access to any of these things, your fathers and mothers would do the same. So let us never forget that. Let us never forget that. Gratitude is a virtue. Without gratitude, we are just empty vessels. If we are not grateful to those who have helped us come where we are today, we haven't really come anywhere at all. We haven't come anywhere at all. We are nobody, if not for the people who helped us come where we are today. Spare a moment for the teachers as well, who leave their own blood and bones. They leave their own blood behind. They leave their own children behind and they come and look after us. The sacrifices that our teachers made for us. Don't you all have a favorite teacher from school? I certainly have. She was my mother after my own mother. And she was. And the same, there was a master, a male teacher who was just the same. A father who was second to only my father. My God, the sacrifices they were willing to make. The meals that they were willing to skip for somebody else's child. The number of times they were prepared to stay after school and help one child, just one child, work on his homework, get his work done. And the inspiration that they were able to instill in our minds, they're just continually saying, when we were down, Buddha, you can do it. You can do it. Trust me, you can do it. I believe in you. We had someone who believed in us. Weren't there moments in your life, ladies and gentlemen, where you couldn't believe in yourself, you didn't trust in yourself, you had no confidence in yourself, but there was someone who was there who said, I believe in you. I trust you. I know you can do it. So let's go do it. That's all you needed. Look where you are today. Just have a look at where you are today thanks to that. How they mentored you, how they guided you. Sometimes there were times when you couldn't go and share the problems you had with your own parents. But they were your teachers there. They said, okay, tell me. Alright, I'll promise you. No one will find out. I'll help you. Sometimes they were the only light in those dark times. Remember? That is why when we do a merit transfer, we thank our teachers as well. Anyone who's helped us, anyone who's supported us, anyone who has assisted us. You know, we human beings, sometimes we feel, dear ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, we are self-sufficient, we are self-contained, we can look after everything, right? I am on top of the world, I have my money, I have my cars, I have my house, I have my property, I have my business, I have my job, I have my everything. But if you just take a moment to look at who's at the end of all of that, you know, you're just holding on to a few strings. Those strings are held by somebody else at the other end. You have your job because your employer decided to give you that job. He thought he was suitable for it. She thought he was suitable for it. Let's be grateful for that. Today you're educated. Well done. But let's not forget your Montessori teacher, your grade one teacher, who's still in Montessori. She's still teaching grade ones. Today you probably got a PhD. You got a master's. You're a graduate. Fair enough. And you might think, well, my Montessori teacher, all she knew was to teach me iron and iron. That's all she knew. Today she's doing the same thing. Yes, she's still teaching the alphabet. But had she not taught you the alphabet, tell me how ever could you have gone on to become a PhD holder in biophysics? That's not the first lesson you learned, was it? The first lesson you took was the alphabet. So it is thanks to her. She was the stepping stone to bring us here. Teachers in the house, I have great respect for all of you. Think about the sacrifices you make and now think about the sacrifices that someone has made for you. What remarkable people they are. Let's not forget to be grateful. Gratitude is a virtue on which I believe most other principles, values and virtues are built on. So let's not forget the sacrifices that they made for us. He could have been your music teacher, could have been your dance teacher perhaps. Maybe it was your tuition teacher, perhaps. When you were really struggling in school and there was no hope of you passing that exam. Perhaps because you were not that studious. Maybe you were not so keen. Maybe you were not so focused. Maybe you had your mind set on other things while you were at school. But there was one master, there was that tuition master perhaps who said, it's fine, you know what? I know we've only got 6 months, but I'll help you with it. I'll help you wait over this. And he did. Extra classes, extra help, extra tuition. Haven't we all got a teacher like that? A teacher that we can be grateful for? You know, these were the people who have made us, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not forget that. And in the same vein, I am glad and I am grateful to all of you because you are also making someone else. My teacher always tells me, count not the success of your life by the number of years you have lived, but by the number of hearts you have healed. That is how I count my successes. How many hearts have I helped heal? Your success should be that. Here we might have teachers, we may have doctors, and various other professions. I'll just name one or two, just a few. What about the postman? You think he's just the postman? Come rain or shine, he's there. You know, it's alright here. In some countries, it snows like hell. Well, not like hell, it doesn't snow in hell. But, metaphorically speaking, it snows like hell. And the postman is still there. You know, our grandmothers, I remember when I was a young child, on New Year's Day, we always gave something to the postman as a way of saying thank you. It was just a small token of gratitude. Let's make sure that in our busy lifestyles that we live today, we don't forget to do that. Let's make sure we don't forget to do that. Yes, he's doing a job. Fair enough. But so are you. You know that in whatever job you do, there have been plenty of occasions where you have gone over and beyond the job that you are supposed to do. Each and every one of you, if whatever profession you're in, put your hand up if you've never gone over and beyond what you're supposed to do, if you've never gone the extra mile for someone. No one. So you know. You've all gone the extra mile for someone whenever it was possible. Whenever you could do it, you did it. Whenever you could do that extra favor, you did it. Sometimes you had to make some arrangements on your side so that it could be possible. You made that extra, you went that extra mile. And the postman, that's the same. I know he's just the postman, but he's not just the postman. He's the postman. He's your postman. He's your postman. And you know, he lives in threat. He always lives in the fear that he's going to lose his job. You know why? Because today technology is too advanced. Doctors needn't fear because we all die. We all grow old and we all die. But what about the poor postman? Soon enough, the postman is going to die. So he lives in constant fear, but yet he has to report to duty. In the back of his mind, he knows maybe just another 5 years, 10 years, a decade down the line, he's not going to have a job. But he's too old to train himself in another discipline. He's too old to take the courses. He's too old to go to school again. He's too old to go to university, because that is the only profession he knows how to do. But he still delivers your post. Yes, again, you can say, but he's just doing his job. He gets his pay for that. So do you then. You get paid to do what you do. But it's not just that. I know you're all grateful, ladies and gentlemen. I'm celebrating gratefulness. This is a celebration of gratefulness. And we should all do it from time to time. I love to see young children in the house. We need to teach them gratefulness. We need to teach them the virtue of gratitude. Not so that when you are older, they come and look after you. Nah. Let's not bring up children so expecting them to do something for us. Let's make them great for who they are. Let's teach them greatness so that they are great just on their own merit. Let's not make them great expecting something from them in return. That's a business transaction. I don't want parents to be like that. You know, when my mother gave me up for the sasana, she knew full and truly well that I was not going to be there to look after her when she's going to be poorly. Hats off to her. She knew truly and fully and well, you know, from that day onwards, I was not going to be there. But I know when I was younger, she probably thought, you know, son's doing well, he's good. Good education, he's going places, he looks like he's good doing things. You know, never when I asked her, Amma, what are your reservations about my going into the sasana? Never did she say, well, you know what, I thought you were going to look after us in our final years. in our twilight years. She never said that. She never said that. Because she knew if that is what was going to make me happy, and I was doing the right thing, she was okay with that. So let's not forget all that. Let's not forget the postman. Let's not forget the milkman. Let's not forget the man who has a small shop, you know, 20 yards from where you live. It's not a supermarket, yes. It's just a shack, yes. But that's where you buy your bread from. Thanks to him, you know, any and every morning you wake up and you realize there's nothing for breakfast. All you have to do is take what, I don't know how much loaf of bread is these days. You take it, you walk out in your pajamas and you can go and get your bread. What if you had to drive to the supermarket for that? Let's be grateful that he still runs that shop. And when you forget your change, you know what he does? He says, Mata. He throws up. To you, that change is nothing. But to him, you know, that could mean a lot. But he'll still call you back. Mata, you left your itrusal. You left your change. And if you buy something and leave it by mistake behind, sometimes he'll bring it around. It's happened to me, folks. I forgot to take what I bought from the shop. You know what? He sent his only son all the way around to my house and said, Sir, my father said you left this in the shop. He wanted me to take it over to you. Wow. No, they don't have CCTV cameras to prove that I paid for it. It's just a shack. Let's be grateful to them. What about the people who sweep the roads and who mend them, who mend the potholes so that you can drive your precious little vehicles on the road safely? Yes, I know there are lots of potholes out there. I know there are bumpy roads, and I know that there are roads that have seen better days. Yes, I know. But if those people stop doing all that, you know, you would be driving a safari every day. There are people who come out in the sun, they toil themselves, leaving their families behind. They don't work in air-conditioned rooms. They work in the scorching sun. And they'll mend the road so that you can drive your car safely over it. They don't have a car to drive. And please don't say, but they get paid for it. Not everyone does everything for money. People need money. But that's not the be all and end all for everyone. Do you do everything you do for money? Let me ask you that question. If all you do just for the money, put your hand up. All I do, Swami knows, I only do for the money. I only fed my child because it's one day I knew that he was going to look after me. Clearly not. So why do people think that we are good and gracious and kind and we think about others, we don't do everything just for the money? Why do we think that then the people who mend the roads do it just for the money? It's not so. Their hearts beat just the same as ours. Their blood is as red as ours. They think and feel and have emotions just like you and I do. They're human beings just like us. They've seen love and they need love just like us. They like to be appreciated. When we leave the school every day, the security guard, the gentleman out there, we always pay them our respects before we leave. We bring our hands together and do our respect to them when we leave. Because it is thanks to them, today you can come and park your cars out there and not worry about a thing and just listen to this sermon. When you go out somewhere, if you didn't have somewhere to park your car, if you had to park it by the roadside, are you not in a constant state of fear? If you hear a big bang, if you hear a loud noise from outside, if you hear the car alarm go off, right now you don't need to fear about anything because there are people out there, they're watching out for your property. But because they're out there, they can't be here. How much do you pay them for that? How much do we pay this for this? Nothing. So you see, people don't do everything and anything just for money. Money is not the be-all and end-all for everything. You know, there is humanness inside every human being. There is kindness, there is gentleness. We just need to appreciate that a little bit more. The hunger for love and appreciation far exceeds the hunger for bread and butter, ladies and gentlemen. Let us recognize that. So whenever you have the chance, appreciate. And I'm not saying that you don't. Please don't get me wrong. I said this is a celebration of gratitude. So we celebrate what we appreciate, and let's do more of that. I celebrate your gratitude when you give the gift of giving. That's where this all started. I'm thrilled about that. I want all of you to have that opportunity. So even if you have little, split it in half. Share it. So that everyone gets a chance to offer something. You know, if I have to be here until 12 noon, because all of you have to stand in line, but you all share in that meritorious deed, it's fine. I'll be here till 12. That's fine. Provided you all share in that. That's fine. Because that is what makes me happy. Because then I know hearts have been healed. It's not the meal, it's not the food. You know, bring your leftovers. That's fine. You don't have to bring something from the shop on your way home, on your way here. You don't have to do that. You don't have to go shopping for it. Just bring whatever is left at home. If you forget, for instance, Sunday, we forgot. Swaminarayan says, coming for Pindapata. Oh, bother. What do we do now? Let's buy something from the shop. Need not do that. If there's something in the fridge that's not going to go off until Swaminarayan has his meal, just bring it. It's fine. I'm not here for the food. I'm here for the thought. You giving up. That's what I'm here for. Especially the young children, give them a chance to do so. Because you know, in their little minds, their little hearts, they may not understand the full gravity of this yet, but you know it. Perhaps you know, only half of what I'm saying still makes sense to them, but that's okay. Encourage them to engage in those meritorious deeds. Then they'll ask you on the way home, Amma, why does Swaminarayan take the yogurt and the rice in the same alms bowl? Why do they do like that? But at home we have it in separate dishes. They'll ask you that question and then you have to give them an answer. You know, in that answer, there'll be a path for them to Nibbana. But they need to be exposed to this first of all. Because when they go to a restaurant, you know, everything is served out, a 10-course meal is served out from 10 dishes. So there's never the need to question why all things go into the same bowl. So when they ask you that question, why does Swaminarayan take everything in the same bowl? There's the yogurt in it, there's the pudding in it, there's the rice in it, there's the curry in it, there's the biscuit in it and the chocolate in it. Why does Swaminarayan take it all in the same alms bowl? Puta, when he puts it through his mouth, it goes to the same pouch. So the question to be asking is then, Amma, that is the next question to you. Amma, then why do we take it in different bowls? Because Puta, when you become a monk, all 10 of your stomachs become one. Right now we have about 10. That's why we can eat for 10 people. Simple science, simple logic. Do you have 10 compartments in which you have your 10 courses going? No, it's the same. It's the same stomach. So if it's all going to the same place, why bother? How it goes in? You know, just imagine if I insisted that my dessert comes separate to my main course and that comes separate to my starters, I'd have to carry three arms bowls with me. Go from door to door. Someone brings something. What do you have? I have some pudding, Venerable Sir. Into the dessert bowl, please. I also have some rice, sir. Hold on a second. Let's close that. Put to the other shoulder. Right. Here's the main course. Right. Go on, madam. We only do things that make sense. We don't do things that make little sense. So let's be grateful. Let's have that gratitude. You know, if there's someone who brings the milk to you, be grateful for that. The shopkeeper, the cashier who works at the till, you know how many hours they have to keep standing so that they can serve you when you're there, and the smile they wear on their face. When you go to them, you expect them to smile at you, don't you? Because you expect good service. But you know, they have the same problems that you do. It's okay for you as the customer to frown at them, but it's not okay for them as the shopkeeper to frown at you, is it? It's okay for you to have a frown on your face. Tears. How much? That's going to be exactly 2,335, please, sir. Too expensive, bloody expensive, these things. And then she can't say anything. She has to say, thank you, sir. Would you like a receipt with that, sir? Shall I pack it up for you, sir? Yeah, hurry up, whatever. Because you have to take the wife to her school, or to the job. You have to do the school run. Or you left the potatoes on the boil, you have to rush home. There's a cake in the oven, so you have to get home as soon as possible. So you have no time for the niceties, but they've got to. They can't react to your frowns. They can only wear a smile on their face. You think they do it for the money? They're trying to give you good service. So, you know, whenever you walk up to someone and you expect them to give you service, give service so you get service. That's the deal. Whatever you want in life, ladies and gentlemen, just give it. Give it freely and you will get it freely. If you want a hearty smile from someone, give one. If you want someone to be genuinely kind to you, what must you do? Be genuinely kind to them. Say thank you like you mean it. Say thank you, not like you mean it, because you mean it. Say thank you as if that is the last thank you you're ever going to utter. Because it just might be. Let's never regret in our lives one day, I couldn't thank her for everything she did to me. I couldn't thank her for everything she did for me. And alas, now she's gone. If ever you walk into the hospital, right at the reception desk, I don't mean just by the doctor. Yes, the doctor spends their time with you, you know, they're the one who prescribes the medicines and they'll put the stethoscope on you and check you're all working and in good order. But what about the receptionist who gave you the token, who took your money and pointed you in the right direction? What about them? They're busy as well, but they have to wear that smile on their face. Perhaps they don't have the time to say thank you for your money. You thank them. You're not getting a thank you from them because you've not thanked them. Simple as. You know, they're not the ones who come to the Sunday sermons. You are. So why do we expect them to say thank you first? Let's be the ones who are thankful. Let's say thank you first. This is a philosophy I always had in my life. Wherever I went, ladies and gentlemen, you know, whether it was a store, whether it was a shop, whether it was on the airport, on a flight, you know, if ever I saw someone and I thought that they were just making an extra effort, just a little bit more, if they went over what they are prescribed to do by their job descriptions, I would always take a moment to talk to them, at least to say thank you. Or if I had the time, I would ask them, can you please give me your manager's name? I want to write a letter of thank you. Every time I've been in a hospital, I've never walked out without thanking the nurses and their managers. I would call them and say, madam, this member of staff that you have, what a wonderful member of staff. She went the extra mile. I'd always look out for the good things that they do. I'm a scanner. I scan for the good stuff. Why do we scan for the ugly stuff? I mean, what does that make us? Let's not be a hoover. What does a hoover do? It walks around collecting all the what? All the rubbish, all the garbage, all the trash. Let's not be hoovers. We are human beings. So let's scan for the good stuff. Don't be a hoover, be a deva. Scan for the good stuff. See what people are always willing to do for you. If they have a smile on their face, say thank you. You know, that smile on your face, it's made my day. Thank you so much. That's all you have to say. Next time they will smile it. They will smile at the next person they meet as well. You know, it was thanks to you. Kindness begets kindness. Gratitude begets gratitude. Let's always be kind to other people. Let's always be grateful to other people. You know, this is what I want from these talks. Not your understanding of the Dhamma, not how much Dhamma you know, not the Dhamma points, not the principles or the laws or the laws of the Dhamma, not the Paticca-samuppada, not the Abhidhamma. Those are not the things I want from you. As I said, Nibbana, failing that, the heaven. The heaven does not get opened up for those who pass the Dharmacharya exam. That's not how you get to heaven. You can work on your exams, fair enough, but that is not the path to heaven. Dānaṁ saggassa sopānaṁ is what the Buddha said. Giving is the path, is the escalator, is the lift that lifts you up to heaven. So if giving to is the lift to heaven, giving up is the lift to Nibbāna. But to give up, we need to practice giving to. That's the stepping stone to it. So, when you're at the doctor, of course, I think, you know, when you're at the doctor, you always thank the doctor. Because you feel, you know, if I'm not nice to the doctor, you know, they might not look after me. You know that feeling of, that it's the, here's the difference between, here's how you identify if the person you've been speaking to is a great person. Simple. Really simple way. When you've had a conversation with them, if you feel that they are great, maybe they're great people, but if after having spoken with them you feel that you are great, they are most definitely great people. Most definitely. Did you catch that? And when you've had a conversation with someone and you walk away feeling great, greatness in who you are, how great you are, how good you are, how gentle, how kind, how virtuous you are, how much more you can achieve, how much more potential you have, what greatness you can aspire for. If you can walk away feeling great when you walked in there feeling so small, but you walk away feeling great, guess what? You've just spoken to a great man. Now do the same for others. When people come up to you weak and feeble, help them. Help them stand up. And sometimes all you have to do is just say, hey, nice hat, I like it. You know, they'll walk away just adjusting their hat, thinking, oh, this hat, it makes me really good, look really good. Something so simple, nice shirt, that's enough. You know, that's an appreciation. You have no idea, you know, how much people yearn for that. People do. At the workplace, you know, you see someone come, you know, someone who's not feeling as uppity as they usually are. They're not feeling as positive as they usually are. If you see them, you say, "Hey, nice sari. I like that." That will put a smile on their face. Remember we talked about turning frowns upside down? We can do that with a sense of gratitude. Just as we all expect gratitude, let's not forget that there are others who expect it from us as well. Don't you all expect gratitude? Don't you want people to be grateful to what you've done for them? Let's be honest. Because we're not arahants, right? An arahant does not expect gratitude. Because an arahant has seen the world equanimously. He doesn't feel that he is the one who has given. So therefore he doesn't expect something to come back to him. He doesn't expect a thank you. He doesn't expect a smile. He doesn't expect a please. None of that. He doesn't expect that. But as men and women who have emotions, who are sentient, who are beings, you know, we know how much we expect gratitude. But let's not forget that there are others who expect the same from us. So when you're at the shop, say thank you. If there's a shop, if there's an assistant at the store, you know they wear their name tags, don't they? I always make a point. Nowadays I don't get to do it because I don't go shopping. But when I used to, and I'm sure, you know, there'll be many of you who do it already. I would like to encourage all of you to do that. If you ever see someone wearing a name tag, and they come and thank you, they come and do something for you, perhaps they'll show you where the carrots are. Or maybe where the leeks are, maybe where the fruit is, maybe you can get a bag from. If you see that name tag, look for the name tag. It will say Sampath. You say, "Thank you, Sampath." You say, "What? What? Huh?" It's the sweetest word you'll have heard the whole day. Trust me. You'll see his face brighten up like the sun. Trust me. Just do it once and enjoy that as you do it. You know, you can reward yourself just by looking at the smile on that face. Just do it. Try it. Say, without just saying thank you, just say, "Thank you, Sampath." Because you know what? They always live in fear. They're always working in fear that the next thing they're going to get is a complaint. No, they do. Because most of them work for a very measly wage. You know, they don't get a lot of money. And that may be their first or their second job, and they're just trying to hold on to it as best as they possibly can because they've got debts to pay. They've got a younger brother at home who needs to be schooled, and the father is ill. The mother's got a cancer, the father is poorly, or maybe he's a drunkard. So he's the one who's the breadwinner for the family. So that 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, whatever it is he receives at the end of the month, you know, it is precious to him. To some of you, that might just be pocket money. But that one thank you, Sampath, you know, it can mean the world to him. And if you ever see, or if you have at least experienced good service from someone, do make it a point to turn. If you have a spare moment, ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you have a moment to spare, if you're not in a great rush, ask him, "Sampath, can I speak to your manager?" You know the first thing he's going to do? Almost faint. His heart's going to skip a beat. He's going to start sweating. His palms are going to go all sweaty. Right? And he's going to start stuttering. "What did I do to you?" Of course, that is what his reaction is going to be, because what is he used to? Compliment or complaint? Complaint. Give him a pat on his shoulder and say, "No, Sampath. I don't want to complain. I want to thank your boss, your manager, for the excellent service that you have given to me today. Can I talk to him?" He'll drop everything and go and get his manager. That may be the first compliment he has ever received in his working life. It just might be. he will walk to the back of the store, like he's climbing up to heaven. He'll be walking on clouds. Try it. Do try. The next time you go do your weekly shopping, you know, just try it. Experience, you know, the gift of giving. Experience it. You know, nothing will make you happier. Ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, nothing will make you happier. Nothing makes me happier because that is what my teacher has asked me to do. Heal hearts. I'm learning to be a king of hearts. Let's all be. Madam, be a queen of hearts. Sir, be a king of hearts. Be a blessed one. Be a blessing on others. Make others feel, wow, you know, spend 5 minutes with that guy and I feel like I'm in heaven. How do I spend a bit more time with that person? Make other people want to spend their time with you. You know, just think about it, folks. You know, if there's a man who's very ill, right? He's on his deathbed. The doctor said, you know, your last moments. And if he has to say, I know this man that I met one day. If only I could spend 5 minutes with him. And he's meaning you. You know, what a gift that would be. What a gift that would be. What an honor that would be. Let's make that happen. You're all fully and well capable of it. Because I know you have so much love and affection to give people, but you know, society, the norms of society, the decorum that has been set in place in society, and the rules and the disciplines and all that, you know, and how we have to be so self-centered, self-conscious, and keep other, you know, maintain our boundaries with other people, you know, all that malarkey that's been put into our heads, you know, we've kind of been molded into some robotic figures that we have become today. So much so that any transaction we have with another human being always has to have a price tag. What's human about us then at the end of the day? If we can't extend a hand to help someone and not expect them to put something on the hand, something that has a number on it. If you can't give someone a helping hand without expecting them to place some money on it, what is our humanness? Must everything have a price? What about the priceless things? The very things that make us human. So whenever you receive good service, even if you take your car to get serviced, do make sure you thank them. Yes, you pay them. Maybe you even give them a tip. I'm not talking about the tip. Because, you know, today a tip is expected. Right? But your thank you is not expected because they don't think they've fed a human being. That's the long and the short of it. You go to a restaurant, you pay the bill, you keep the tip, what, 10%, 25%, whatever it is, you keep the tip and you walk away. That tip is expected. But they don't expect you to say thank you, they don't expect a smile from you, and they certainly won't expect you to say, ask your manager to come, I want to have a chat with him. Where's your manager? Can I talk to him, please? They certainly won't expect that. If they do, they'll ask, sir, was there anything wrong with the meal? What have I done? Please don't say anything, I might lose my job. And then my poor mother, my poor father, my young brother who I have to send to school, I'm not going to be able to do that, please don't do that. Is what they're begging for you, begging of you. So they don't expect that because they don't believe that they've had to fend a human being. That's why they don't expect that from you. So prove to them that who they have fed is a human being. Let's not lose our humanity. In all the technological advancements that we have been able to make, the leaps and bounds that we have been able to make as a human race, right? And all the advancements that we can shout from the rooftops about, shout so loud that the aliens might probably be getting leaves of what we're saying now by this point. They're probably within earshot, right? Let them come if they will one day, but let them recognize us as human beings. for our humanity. These were the makings of our ancestors, ladies and gentlemen. These were the makings of a Sihala Jatiya. This is who your ancestors were. When we take a moment to transfer those merits to our ancestors, let's not forget that the greatest merit transfer that we can do, that the greatest thing we can do to make them happy, to help them rejoice, to be grateful to them, is to carry forward the customs, the cultures, the values, if not the customs, at least the values and the virtues that they fought so hard to protect and preserve. Let us not leave them behind and take only forward the technological advancements that they have passed on to us. That is our legacy. That is our heritage. Our heritage should live in our hearts. Sigiriya, yes, is a heritage. Yes. But our heritage is much more than a rock. If your heart is a rock, if your heart is a Sigiriya, then what have our ancestors passed down to us? So let's be grateful. You know, sometimes when you go shopping for clothes, aren't there many a time where you walk in, you try on a few things and then you say, you know what, I don't like any of them. Thank you very much, and you walk away. Aren't there times where that has happened? You know, they have high hopes when you walk in. I'm not saying you have to buy anything. If it doesn't suit you, you don't like it, don't buy anything, it's fine. But if you know that they have made an effort for you, wholeheartedly thank them. Not just on a piano. Not just that. You know, if you're elderly and they're younger, say puta, bohoma stuti. Do bohoma stuti. Api ginginna. That's going to be enough. If they have a name tag on them, use their name tag. Use their name. Thank them with saying, say their name out loud. You know, that's the sweetest word for any man. When someone uses their name. You know, we learn these things in customer service. When you're a customer service assistant, one of the first things you get taught is, when you talk to a customer, use their name. If any of you have worked in customer service, if you have got some training in that, you know what I'm talking about. One of the best things you can do is use a customer's name, because that is the sweetest thing they've ever heard. Or they will hear the whole day. So, why don't we give that treatment back to the person who serves us? I mean, why do they have their name tags on them? So that we can complain? And we know their name when we complain? Is that why they have their name tags? No. What about when you're driving and the policeman stops you, a traffic police officer, he stops you. Perhaps because of an offense, a traffic offense. Perhaps they're just checking you. I invite you to thank them for stopping you. How do we normally feel about this? You're probably thinking, this Swami Mahase can't be from Earth. He's probably from another planet or something. He's very weird. Yeah, my teacher's done weird things with me. He's completely re-engineered me. You know, let's not assume that they're stopping you for some no good. You know, this is what has been gone into our heads. Right? We've been brought up in a society where people have always said all these, you know, there are derogatory terms, of course, I can't use them in a sermon, but you know what they are. They'll say it's for the bribes, right? They'll say they're corrupted, they just want to fine you for something, right? Yeah, maybe, but not all of them. Some of them are just doing their jobs. If you drive too fast, is it not right that they stop you and give you a warning? You know, if you carried on and had an accident, who suffers? The policeman? If you don't have your seat belt, tell me, why were seat belts made? Why are seat belts fitted to cars? So that the police don't stop you, right? Why are cars fitted with seat belts? To save lives. And if you don't wear a seat belt, any good police officer should do what? Stop you. In doing so, they might even fine you. Is a fine not better than a lost life? At least with that fine, you'll know, you'll learn a lesson perhaps. I shouldn't do that again. See, haven't they helped save a life? Haven't they saved a child, a mother? Haven't they saved a child, their father? Because if you have that accident, you know, your son, your daughter is going to lose their mother, their father. A brother is going to lose his sister. A sister is going to lose their brother. That is what they're trying to save from happening. Stop from happening. You know, they could turn a blind eye, yes. But who's going to take the brunt of it?
We are.
So if ever you get stopped by a traffic police officer, thank them. You don't have to worship them and say Namo Tassa Bhagavato. You don't have to say all that. Just say, thank you. Thank you, Mahatma. Stuti. They might ask you, why? Why are you thanking me? Because they're not used to it. Usually they're used to, what's your number? Which police station? Because I know the others, I know the senior officers to call. Right? Give me a number. And this. Look at that. Give me a number. Not telephone number, this number. I'm gonna ring, you, do you know who I am? Yes, someone who's going to die. That's the answer. So don't, who, do you know who am I with them? They're trying to save a life. Yeah, there may be one or two people who are corrupt. Yeah, that's just your bad luck. What can I say? That's just your bad luck. But I don't agree that the vast majority of them are like that. I don't agree. I think they're just trying to do their jobs. And they're trying to do it right. But you know what happens when the police officers, you know, they always get the stick. When all they get is a scorn from you, and when all they get is a shouting and an admonishing from you, now they don't feel positive about what they do. That is what happens. They begin to think, why should I stop this ungrateful? Yeah. Why do I try and save a life? If I'm going to get a telling off anyway, I might as well, you know, make the most of this situation. See, we encourage that bad behavior. I'm not one for pointing my finger out at others and saying, you change and then I'll change. I'm not one for like that. I always point my finger at myself and say, I change and the whole world will change. That is the path I know to Nibbana. I change. If people are always doing bad things to you, if you end up always getting the stick for things, right, perhaps it's time you change your attitude about things. If you are so misfortunate that only bad things ever happen to you and bad people always come your way, maybe you ought to change. Maybe you're the one who ought to change. You know, bees don't fly around turds. You know what a turd is? Droppings. Bees don't fly around turds. They fly around flowers. What you have around turd is a blue bottle fly. The flies are where the turds are. The bees are where the flowers are. So if you want to be someone who want to attract the bees, then be like a flower. If only bad things ever happen to you, if only bad people ever come to you, then you've got to take a long look at yourself and ask yourself this question, who am I? Why is it that just bad people always come to me? I must be an attractor, a magnet for bad people. So then maybe I'm the one who's bad. See, this is the transformation we need. I want to make in this world. In as many or as few people as I possibly can. By coming here, you have given me a chance, an opportunity to make an impact, to heal a few more hearts. Your presence here is important in that way. Because I know you're not just one person. Behind you, there's a family. That's why last week I encourage you to talk, discuss amongst your family. What did you learn from today? What things did you take from today? What do you think about what Swami has said on the way back home? You know, do you think what he's saying is practical? Do you think what he's saying is doable? Is it feasible? Does it make sense? Is it logical? He talks about vexation. He says that happiness or the pleasure that we experience only comes after a relief from vexation. Is that true? Question. Question everything. If we are not open-minded, we are nothing at all. A good Buddhist has to be open-minded. Doesn't take anything at face value. Be grateful for the people who spend their life with you. Your family. Last of all, your family. You know, for all your weaknesses, for all your faults, for all your idiosyncrasies, for all your ways, for all your mannerisms and your means, right? And how your queerness, for all that, they still put up with you, don't they? Would you put up with yourself? You know, in your darkest moments, when you're just, you know, when you're just a bowl of trouble, when you're not feeling positive at all, when you're just feeling like, you know, the whole world's against you, when you're feeling so upset and agitated and annoyed. Right, and you're so bothered and you won't let anyone come to you. You don't want to talk with anyone. You just want to be by yourself. Right? Would you be with someone like that? Would you want to? You know you wouldn't want to be with someone like that. They don't exude positivity. You know, they're not someone who you would want to be with. But, you know, see, your family, they still put up with you. And it's not just because they're family. Because these days, you know, in this day and age, if you want a part, it's very easily achievable. Your husband doesn't just put up with you because he's your husband. Maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago, perhaps, but not now. Your wife doesn't just put up with you because she's your wife, because she has to. It's not just because of the honor of the family. It's not just because of the children. No. She does so, he does so because he thinks about you. They make that sacrifice. They have given up for your happiness. Let's be grateful for that. You know, I ask every husband and wife listening to this. You know, when you go to bed at night, you know, kiss her good night. There's nothing wrong with that. And being a good Buddhist, it's perfectly fine. Just kiss her goodnight, as you did, you know, when you first got married. There's nothing non-Buddhist about that. You're just, it's a sign of gratitude. That's what it is. Not carnal lust. That's not what I'm talking about. A kiss on the forehead does no harm to anybody. You know, from time to time, thank her for being the mother to your children. Let's not forget that. And it doesn't have to just be on Mother's Day. no, fine, let there be a Mother's Day. But I think, you know, it's just, again, consumerism. Let there be a Mother's Day, it's fine. But, you know, the very fact that today we need a day in the calendar for us to go and appreciate our mothers, is just sad. The fact that people have forgotten that they have a mother, or that they have to be grateful for their mothers, so much so that we have to have a Mother's Day in the calendar, so that people are reminded to go and be thankful to their mother, is just pathetic, I think. Don't need to be like that. What's the wife's day? Where's the wife's day? Is that the anniversary? You know, every day is an anniversary. Be thankful to your wife just for being by your side. You know, she puts up with everything that you throw at her, doesn't she? Wives, She puts up with everything you throw at her. The good days and the bad days, all of it. When you're feeling really down and you just have to have someone to have a go at, who has to take it all? She does. And she'll take it all. She'll stomach all of it. She'll bring you a tea, she'll bring you a hot chocolate, she'll make you your lunch, she'll do your dishes, she'll wash your clothes. You say, no, Swaminas, at home we have the washing machine. Oh, Swaminas, now we have a maid. Yeah, fine, you have the maid that does that, thank her as well. But that's besides the point. Your maid can never replace your wife. Your maid will leave you when you stop paying her. She will. You can't go and have a go at your maid. She'll file a lawsuit against you. But you know the amount that wives put up with? Just be grateful. Just be grateful that she is a source of your merits. Whatever good you might have done to others, she brings them to you. You know, you don't get a meal for nothing. Right? Today, this glass of water is here. This water is here because I have given. But someone decided to come and offer it to me. It is because of your offering I am today able to rejoice and enjoy the gift that I gave once. In the same way, you are able to have a hearty meal because she makes sure that it is there for you when you get back home. Wives, be grateful to your husbands. He's the protector of the family. He's always there to guard you, to take care of you. Not another man can set his eyes on you because he's always there watching out. Always protecting you, safeguarding you, and you and the children. He's the reason you can sleep at night without a worry or a fear. He's always there. If ever there's a problem at home, all you have to do is call the boss. Even if he's at work, just call the boss. And he'll do whatever he can. Sometimes he'll, you know, make some arrangements at work and say, I have to dip, you know, quickly nip home for a couple of minutes, I'll be right back. And they'll do all sorts. Whatever they can. This is the pride of the family. So, you know, let's be grateful. There's no husband's day in the diary or in the calendar. But let's take a moment to appreciate what they do. So, kiss him goodnight. When you wake up in the morning, say, good morning, honey. It's fine. There's nothing non-Buddhist about that. That's all very Buddhist. Trust me. Until I left my lay life, that is how I treated my wife. There's nothing non-Buddhist about that. What, being grateful? To your husband, to your wife? Is it non-Buddhist? What's non-Buddhist about that? Gratitude is a virtue, and that is the virtue on top of which all other things are built. You know, one who is grateful to their wife, to their husband, to their mother, to their father, will one day recognize the gratitude that they ought to have to him. If you can't recognize the gratitude you need to have to your family, to your teachers, to the postman, to the milkman, to the one, to your teachers, to who paves the roads, to who mends it, to cleans the road, to the person who washes the toilets, You know, we will never be great enough to understand and appreciate the greatness that the Lord Buddha showed us. So in every opportunity in life, every moment you get, if there is someone who does something for you, let's not get into that crooked way of thinking where we believe that they only do it because there's something in it for them. Even if it is so, that they only do it because there is something in it for them, that's not for us to think. Let them do it because they do it just for them. But for us, we need to see the greater good there. Let's be greater than they are in that way. Let's fill our hearts with greatness. There, you know, there'll be the janitors who clean the toilets for you here, so you can use those toilets. If you bump into them, thank them. Make sure you do that. You know, let the staff who work at the school, be them the teachers or maybe the staff who, you know, the caretakers, let them recognize that, you know, these people they who come here on a Sunday morning, you know, there's something different about them. I see something in you, but I don't know what it is. Let them see that. Let them feel that. Let them feel that you are special. Because I'll tell you what, you know, most people who will get out of a good, nice, brand new luxury car will only look down upon them. That is what they're used to. They will look down on them. They know them as the snobs that they are. Let's not be that. And I know you're not that, so please don't think I'm making any insult. No. But let's make them realize that the sacrifice they make coming here on a Sunday morning, allowing us to make use of these facilities, allowing us to engage in the way we do, sharing amongst ourselves the goodness and the greatness that we all bring here, let them rejoice in that. Let them be glad that they have given up being with their family on a Sunday morning to come here for a great bunch of people. Let them look forward to a Sunday morning. How about that? So as you walk out, you know, drive past the security people out there, right? Give them a nod. If that's the least you can do. Just give them a nod. Give them a smile. Say thank you if you can. If they're far too busy to reply, so be it. It's fine. I'll try again next week. There will be occasions. Don't expect them to do it the same for you in return. No, they're not the ones here. You're the ones here. They're out there looking after your vehicles. So they don't got to hear. They don't get to hear what I've said to you. You do. You know, in doing so, we can heal those hearts, can't we? Remember, they've all got problems. All the problems that we have, they have. Maybe sometimes 10 times more. If you have money problems, ladies and gentlemen, just imagine what sort of problems they must have. If you are struggling to make ends meet, just imagine how much of a struggle life must be for them. So much so that the only thing they can do is stay out there, sometimes in the scorching sun, sometimes maybe not a drop of water. You know, and if it gets busy, they don't have the time to even go to a washroom. You know, that is the work that they have to do. You know, you can't say, I had to go to the washroom so I don't know how that car blew up. You can't say that. You can't say that. Be thankful to the bus driver, to the conductor, who makes your journey possible. They may not treat you like, you know, a first-class citizen. Perhaps they won't give you that royal treatment, but it's fine. Let's make sure that they realize that in this world, there are some people who are just a little bit different. Not everyone's the same. Let's not expect from others what we can't give them. Let's expect from others what we give them. That is what I want from these talks. That transformation that happens within you, and you become a blessing to the people around you. I want you to be a wonderful mother. I want you to be a wonderful mother. I want you to be the best mother your child could ever have hoped for. I want you to be that. This is not asking you to come and be a monk. No. If destiny would have it, then it will be so. Let's let Vipaka decide that. Let's let destiny decide that. There's no rush. And to be a good Buddhist, you don't have to be a monk. I'm glad for this, grateful for this question. You know, talking about some of the issues that people have in their lives and family problems and you know, challenges that they have, health problems and various concerns and how it's causing mental distress. Perhaps, you know, this is what might have been missing in your life. Whenever you are in distress, see if you can find someone else who is and go and talk to them. See if you can help someone come out of that. I know it's going to be difficult, but we are not here for the easy things. We are here to make a change. How does a mother start to lactate? She looks at the baby in her hand and she realizes the baby needs milk. And what happens? She begins to lactate. See how much love can do? It's not that the mother wants milk, it's the baby who needs the milk. But when you have so much love and compassion and kindness to others, what they need start to flow through you. That is the teaching of the Buddha. That is why I don't charge you anything. I come here and I know what you need. I know that you have these problems. I know you have challenges in life. I know that there are distresses that bother you. There are things that worry you. So when I come here and I open my eyes and I look at you, like a mother does at her child, I make a resolve. I do. So I don't know where the Dhamma comes from. I'm as happy to listen to this sermon as you are, because I don't know what I have to say at the beginning. This is not a prepared speech. I promise you that. Ask me what I was going to talk to you about today. Ask the Swami Nohansa. I asked him, what did we do last week? As we were waiting for you to prepare yourselves up here. And then he kindly reminded me, Swami Nohansa, last week you said, discuss amongst themselves what we've done and talk about vexation and wanting and how we can relate all of it together. That's what I thought I was going to come and talk to you about today. But there we go. But I know people have these problems. The challenges, family issues, work-related problems, they weigh heavily on people's minds. And I think that is representative of all of you, if not most of you. Everyone's got problems. So when I come here and I look at you and I want to help you, so the Dhamma starts to flow. Let's all be like that. This is not a miracle, I promise you. This is not a magic. I'm not a special person. I'm not a special human being. You know, this is not some supernatural power, or I'm not, you know, somehow spiritually more advanced. No, I'm just a very, very normal human being. If you cut me, you're going to see the same red blood as you would yourself. I'm a very normal human being. I breathe like you. I eat like you. I walk like you. I just dress a little bit differently. That's all. But I'm just like you. I came out of my mother just as you did out of yours. We went to the same schools. We breathed the same air. We walked under the same skies and on the same ground. Perhaps you and I, we probably were on the same bus one day. Who knows? We just didn't know each other then. Yeah, I'm just a very normal human being. See, today I'm able to talk to all of you and inspire to greatness I want you all to understand how much greatness you can give to people out there. People need you, ladies and gentlemen. They need you. It's not their money they need. That's not what they need. There will be some who might want it. Right? But what they need is your humanity. They need your greatness. They need your kindness, your gentleness. Give them that and give it unreservedly. Give it wholeheartedly. Become a blessing to others. Let people rejoice in your presence. Let they look, make them look forward to seeing you, to talking to you, to being with you. When people have a problem, may they always think of you. They don't always have to come rushing to the temple. What if in you they see a temple? How great would that be? You know, if you're the guy who your friends always go to talk to when they have a problem, wow, hats off to you, well done. If in the family, you know, the sisters, the cousins, when they have a problem, when they have worries and concerns, if you are the person they come to talk to for counsel, for advice, for good guidance, well done. You know, that's remarkable. You might think nothing of it, but don't take it lightly. It's such an achievement. Because not all the money in the world can buy people happiness. Don't you agree? The richest man who died crying, died shedding tears of sorrow. The richest man. If you ever read Steve Jobs' biography, who was known to be one of the richest men alive, you know, in his last days, if you read maybe the last few chapters, I'll paraphrase him. He said, you know, today he realizes that every pursuit that he made to achieve the riches that he did has not really helped him find the happiness that he wanted in life. But today, our young people, they look up to people like that. They are icons in their lives. And there's nothing wrong with that if all you're looking for is material success. But what I'm saying is material success is not going to give you the happiness in mind. A happy heart doesn't come from that. A full stomach maybe, but not a happy heart. A happy heart comes in helping other people be happy. That is how one can be happy. Be a blessing to others and help as many people walk out of the problems of their lives. You know, if you are an employer who pays his employees, right, to make them feel that they are coming into their workplace not just because you pay them. As you give them their paycheck, thank them as well. Because they have left their families at home and they have come to work for you. You know, our connections, our relationships among human beings doesn't have to be always one that has a dollar sign. It doesn't always have to be a business contract. Pay them because they need the money. They need to pay their bills just as we do. But as you give them that paycheck, you know, give it with both hands. That is our greatness. Let them see that greatness within you. At our monastery, we always do that. Whether you are a monk or a layperson, it matters not to us. If you ever offer me a glass of water or this piece of paper, I will always hold both hands, take it with both hands, or at least hold one hand with the other. That is what we learn. Because, you know, it's a human being who's giving this to me, not an animal. Someone's giving something to me. This is not poison. It's a glass of water. So if I can't give you by example gratitude and gratefulness, then why do I preach it? If I don't practice what I preach, what a hypocrite I would be. Ask the gentleman who always holds the mutukuda for us. He's always there, right on time. As he opens the door, the first words he'll hear from me is Teruvan Sannai Mahathir. It doesn't have to be him greeting me always. Why can't I greet him first? Because I'm a monk? As a monk, am I somehow above him? We are not of a social status. Because what the real measure of greatness in this world, you know, are the virtues. Sila, samadhi and prajna. Sila is how cool you are. The coolness within your heart. That is sila. Samadhi is, you know, to what extent you can apply the Dhamma. Prajna is your wisdom. And if you can't see within me, the kindness that I preach you, or I preach to you, then I'm not someone who practices what I preach. How can I expect you to aspire to those ideals if I don't exude them in my behavior? So I don't come here and pretend. I am this is me, wherever. So that is what I want as we come here as a congregation. Be a force for good, be a force for greatness, be ambassadors of greatness, of humanity. That's why it matters not whether you're a Muslim or a Christian or a Jew, right, or a Buddhist, because here we transcend all religious segregations. Matters not to us. Here we're all one human race. Whether you're black or white, I don't care. Local or foreign, who cares? If you're a mind that suffers, then I have the medicine. I have the medicine because my teachers showed me how. And every human being suffers as long as they have, or until they understand the Dhamma. That is what we're here for. So, you know, if you have that spare seat in your car as you drive here every Sunday, make use of it. That's another seat that can be occupied by a mind that could seek liberation. Bring them along, even if it's for the sandwich. Once you bring them here, let me look after them. I'll do my part, you do your part. I'll talk to them, as I do to all of you. I'll help convince them that their being here is going to be of value to them. Let me do that part, you do your part. But until you do your part, I can't do my part. See? So who has achieved this? Me? Am I the one who's responsible for this gathering here today? For all these people who have come along? Is it my doing? No, you invited your friends. You invited your siblings. You invited your colleagues. You listened to one sermon and you went home and you spoke to your friends. You went on Facebook. You told your group of friends. You said, you know, there's a sermon, I think you should come. Come along if you've got a spare Sunday. Just come once and see. And they came, and that's why they're here today. You brought them here. I just do the talking. I serve them. You bring them. So I want all of you to be the best mothers you can be, the best father you can be, the best brother you can be. You know, brothers, rivalry, is, you know, in this day and age, it's just terrible. Some families, you know, siblings, they don't even see eye to eye. They don't do that. You know, because all they've known is fighting for possessions. Fighting for the PS3. What is it? PS5 now, is it? 5, 6, 7, 10, 20, 15, 200, I don't know. Fighting for the PlayStation. Fighting for the computer games. Fighting for this, fighting for that. Fighting for the bedroom. That is what they grow up with today. Let's not forget that you have a brother who's there for you. Let's not forget you have a sister who's there for you. You know, when everyone abandons you, there's still family who's always there for you. You don't know it because people haven't abandoned you yet. But if they ever did, as I say, blood is thicker than water. Right? Your blood will always be there to take your side. If you commit a crime, they will do whatever they can to keep you from going to prison, even if it comes to that. So let's always be grateful for that. Grateful for your family. You know, love should start at home. Kindness, gentleness, compassion, they should all start at home. If we start it at home, then we can take that message out there. Then to the workplace, to the school, to society, to other friends, families, and so on. So, as a result of you coming along to these sermons, I need you all to be a better member of your family, above all. Above all. If you are the father who comes here, your family must feel that, you know, as my father has been coming along to these sermons, he's becoming a much gentler person. He's much more gentle than he used to be. He's so kind, he's so loving, he's so compassionate. He understands me better. He treats my mother better. That is what I want. Those days they used to have arguments every now and then, but nowadays, you know, he just backs off. Now mother has her say and, you know, he's like, yeah, okay, whatever. If that's what makes you happy, I'm alright with that. I've never seen my father do like that. What's changed within him? That's the change that we want here. So let's all aspire for that. I wanted to show you a video. And I think they're all prepared for it. I wanted to show it to you much before now, but I'm going to show it to you because you've been so good. And we'll discuss this video next week, right? Because I'm conscious of time. Now, a word about this video. We've been talking about wanting. We've been talking about vexation. We've been talking about how pleasure is the relief from vexation, yeah? And how in the moments where you feel bothered, you feel unhappy, distraught, right? To try and spot what the wanting is. Spot the vexation. And whenever you experience this relief from vexation is where you experience pleasure. So, you might think, well, it's just Swami Nahanse talking about it. How do we know whether that is really true? You all know Stephen Hawking, right? The man who needs little introduction. He's a great scientist of our times. He's a mathematician, one of the best we've seen. He came up with a lot of theories about the universe and how all things work and so on. A great physicist of our times. So I've managed to find a video clip in which you will hear him speak. And this video, it's very rare. I doubt you will ever come across it on the internet. You can look for it, but I don't think you'll find it. It was very hard to find it. So I think this will be the first time you will ever have seen it. And in this video, you will begin to understand, hopefully, what I've been trying to explain to you over the last few weeks about vexation and how when the mind wants something, it goes into that state of, well, vexation. And when it gets an opportunity to experience it, the mind goes into a state of relief. And that's what you experience as pleasure. So as you watch this video, I want you to try and absorb that. I want you to try and understand that. So you will hear from him and what he has to say. It's a very nice documentary. I don't think it's more than a few minutes, but I've managed to get it down to the time that we have today. So watch it and learn from it about vexation and how your mind works. When your mind wants something, right? That is what this video is about. How when your mind wants something, it goes into a state of vexation, and ultimately when it gets it, it goes into a state of relief and you experience pleasure. Is that clear to everyone? Right, let's have a go then. So did you understand what vexation is like? That's what vexation is like. We made that video just as it was. I wanted to show you how when the mind wants something, it goes into a state of vexation. And in those moments where you finally got to see a short clip, Just a few seconds, how did you experience that? What did you feel? You felt relief, didn't you? Gotcha. So there was nothing technically wrong, but I pretended, and the Anagarika Mahatay who got here did a fantastic, he's a good actor. Now take a moment to think about the emotional roller coaster that you went on as you watched that. See how it all started. I hyped it up at the beginning, didn't I? I said it was going to be a fantastic video, it's very rare, you're not going to find it on the internet. And it was by, I didn't say Stephen Hawking is going to talk about vexation. I said, so I haven't lied to you by the way, I'm a monk, I don't lie. I said you're going to hear Stephen Hawking. Did you not? Yes, you heard his voice there. And I said it was very rare. Of course, there's only one of this. We made it at the monastery, so you're not going to find it anywhere else. So I hyped it up. And now you're all looking forward, you're very excited, you want to listen to this, you want to watch it, because it's going to summarize and sum up everything we've learned about Stephen Hawking. And I said, you don't have to take my word for it. There's scientific evidence behind this now and so on. So you're looking forward to listen to this. And then when it started, now you think, ah, excellent, we are going to watch this video. What happened then? You get the technical errors. How do you feel in that moment? How did you feel? Disappointed, right? Yes. I didn't feel that. Think about why. The Anagarika Mahatay, he didn't feel that either. Swami Mahasaya didn't feel that either. Because we were not looking forward to watching what you were looking forward to watching. We knew what was coming, but you expected something else. See, when you want something, your mind goes into a state of vexation. And then those moments where you actually got to see a short picture of a short clip of it, you know, those brief moments, how did you feel in that time? At that time, you felt good, right? Finally, we get to watch. And then soon after, what happened again? Again, the whole thing went away. Then again, you went back into vexation. Did you notice the roller coaster ride that you went through? Ah, thank you. For being my guinea pigs. See, this is what life is all about, around the clock. Whenever you experience pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, I asked you to spot those wantings that you have in your mind. This is a classic example of that. I just wanted to prove the point to you. This is what you go through in life. When you're at the exam and you're using your pen, you're writing with your pen, and if the pen runs out, you feel stressed. But the person sat next to you, he's not stressed. Because he doesn't need or want your pen to write. He wants his pen to write though. See, where the wanting is, that's where suffering is. When you run out of water and you're in the shower, you want hot water, but there is no hot water. That's where the suffering is. It's not the running out of water. It's the wanting hot water. So this is the point I've been trying to prove to you right from the beginning. You know, this is why I asked you to discuss amongst yourselves, you know, is wanting the real problem? Because people think it's not getting what they want that is the problem. No. It's not the not getting what you want. It's not the denial of what you want. It's the wanting in the first place. Expectation is the problem. When you expect something, if you get it, you are relieved of that expectation, and so therefore you feel a sense of relief. That is that relief you experience as pleasure. And when you don't get what you want, now you become distressed and all these emotions that you've been talking about here. that mental torment, all that is experienced when you don't get what you want. But that is not the problem. So a good Buddhist is not someone who goes to the Devalaya or to the temple or anywhere else asking for the divine beings, the celestial beings or any unseen powers, or even comes to the Buddha and says, "Oh Buddha, please may my children have a good marriage life." In Buddhism, we don't go pleading. We don't go begging, because Buddhism is not here to create beggars. It is here to make kings out of beggars. We don't go begging. We free ourselves from a begging mindset. And we instill within ourselves a rich man's mindset. We don't go begging. Because we have understood that going to the Devalaya, yes, you can plead to the gods to give you something, and maybe they will, maybe they won't, I don't know. But the fact that you have to go there and ask for it means you believe that your happiness is dependent on it. Means you're in vexation. You're now expecting for someone else to make you happy. The whole point of Buddhist philosophy is to realize that happiness is within you. Happiness is not something you need to get from the outside. And any happiness that you feel comes from the outside is not true happiness at all. See, now this video, in those moments where you actually got to see a small clip, didn't you feel happy? How come I didn't feel that happiness? If I showed it to you now again, will you feel the same happiness that you did previously? Will you? No, you won't. So then, is it the video that made you happy? If it was, then showing you the video again should make you equally happy. But does it? No. So then it's not the video that made you happy, right? It's your relief from vexation. Put your hand up if you disagree. See, I have proved the point to you. I can't show you the same video again and make you happy, because now you know what to expect. Now you and I are equals. See? Now the same applies for everything in life. So, one more time I ask you, the next week, spot those moments where you feel pleasure, where you feel you're happy, and ask yourself, what is the wanting? What is the expectation that has just been fulfilled? If you can spot that expectation, then you are a great way ahead on this journey. Because then I can next teach you how to free yourself from that expectation in the first place. Because where there is no expectation, there is no suffering. That is not to say, however, that as a mother, as a father, we don't fulfill our duties and responsibilities to those who depend on it. Duties and responsibilities are one, expectations are another. They are three different words. They are not synonyms. Duty and responsibility might go hand in hand, but expectation is, they are worlds apart. An expectation is only a product of an untamed mind. One which brings you suffering and nothing else. Point proven? Yes? Thank you. Thank you for bearing with that. It was a little bit cruel of me and unkind of me, but I hope you will forgive me, because it was all with good intention. To prove the point to you that you suffer unnecessarily. Did the video bring you suffering? Did it? No, because then when I watched it, as Swami Nanda was watching, he should also have suffered. Did it bring you pleasure? No. So it brought you neither. So pain and pleasure, or suffering and pleasure, are not products of the outside world. They're all makings of the mind. That is why as you listen to the Dhamma will transform you internally. Mentally you will begin to change. You know, one of these weeks I'm going to share with you how that expectation is formed. How that desire is formed, how the attachment is formed, what are the factors that contribute towards that. And once you recognize that, once you realize that, you will learn how to free yourself from attachment. Once you're free from attachment, that's it, job done. You don't need to come back again. That is our purpose here. Once your job is done, don't come back. I am not a doctor who says, thank you for coming, see you soon. I want you out of here, not to keep coming back here. I want you to come here, get what you have to get, and then go and help others. That is what the Buddha taught us. Charita bhikkhave charikam bahujana hitaya bahujana sukaya attaya hitaya sattaya satta deva manussana. Monks, once you have understood the Dhamma, now leave, go, travel, go yonder. Take others on an adventure. The devas and the brahmas and the humans, they all need the help that you have to give them. Share with them the pristine Dhamma. Share with them the truth and free them from all suffering once and for all. That was the teaching of all Buddhas. That is what we are here to accomplish. Okay, so on that note, let us do a merit transfer, reminding ourselves how grateful we should be, and all the gratitude that we should have towards all those who helped us. Let us make this merit transfer and bring the sermon to a close. Alright, first and foremost then, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude towards the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and handed it down to the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take this moment to transfer all the merits we have acquired to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that amongst them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take this moment to transfer merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take this moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by translating their talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them, and may by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, our friends, our acquaintances, our teachers, our employers, our employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May by the power of these merits, they be healed of any physical or mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have protected and fulfilled the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way, and may by the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have predeceased us, those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, our ancestors. Let us take a moment to remind ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in many ways and forms. And by the power of these merits, may they, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. And may those who lost their life in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in these merits. May we also transfer these merits to those who lost their lives to natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, forest fires, blizzards, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been friends and family to us, mothers and fathers to us. They will have helped us,
supported us and assisted us in any way, shape and form possible and available to them. So therefore, may by the power of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, if any of them have been born with woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born on the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment then, finally, to resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired today, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may by the power of all the merits and blessings we have acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become an arahatan vahanse or an arahatteranin vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha himself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. And the members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen nidatnva Desha ginnen nidatnva Moha ginnen nidatnva Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetma Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetma Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetma Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetma Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetma Raga gini neva Desha gini neva Moha gini neva Nivansata deva Nivansata
තුන්වන්ගේ සූසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයන් නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුවිතර වෙත්වා සාදු සාදු සාදු